Business strategy always fascinates me because it's like this elusive concept that you could never quite grasp, and just when you think you do, the market changes. Welcome to Maximizing My Business, Considering Business Strategies. We've got a very distinguished guest in studio. Cameron, welcome back.
Hello, Catherine. Thank you. It's great to be back again.
Fantastic. I'm really eager to learn more about business strategy, and maybe you can clarify for me things that I just always feel it's just out of my grasp.
Don't worry, you and many others as well. In fact, there's a famous The Economist, the highly regarded and well-known magazine, The Economist, on one of its covers a while back, it's something along the lines of strategy, nobody knows what it is.
Exactly.
If the experts don't know what it is, you know, the startups are going to struggle as well.
And you know, I don't know about you, because I know your background is also corporate, but I can remember in my time in corporate, we used to produce strategy on strategy on strategy, year after year.
Yeah, so in my background in the corporate environment as well, I spent many years in corporate, and it was fascinating. You know, each department, you know, had the breakaway sessions. You know, go to the bush and have a couple of days of strategizing and thrashing out what your strategy is all about. What always fascinated me is that every department did that. But I don't know if anybody ever tied up those strategies to make sure they were all aligned to the company strategy. Theoretically, it should have been a top-down.
Yeah.
We've always got the wonderful thing called a vision, which was always amazing. But the big thing with the strategy is that, first of all, the startup needs to know why are they in business.
Yeah.
Okay. I've put in a slide there called the shiny object syndrome.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is a... relates to the crow, the bird.
Yes.
Crow sees a shiny object lying on the ground, picks it up and takes it back to the nest. Then flies around again and sees another shiny object, picks it up and takes it back to the nest. Okay, the fact that he was on his way to go and find some food, and he got distracted and saw the shiny object, picked it up and took it back to his nest. He's now lost his way
in
terms of picking. He was going to go get some food. Now he's got a whole nest full of shiny objects and no food.
And no food.
Okay, so. For the guys that haven't seen the YouTube video clip, it's a TED talk by a guy by the name of Simon Sinek. Simon, and his surname is Sinek, S-I-N-E-K, and it's all about Start With Why. Famous, it's been watched, I think it's the third or sixth most watched TED talk ever.
Yeah.
And it's very important that our guys need to understand why they are in business. And as Simon says in his video clip, it's not about the profit. That is a result of being in business,
exactly.
Okay? When I ask my guys, why are you in business? The first thing is not to make money, okay? That might be the reason why they started out in business, but that is not the reason why. They need to find out the deeper reason, why am I in business? Am I here to change the world? Mm. Am I here to make the world a greener place?
Mm.
Am I here to feed hungry children? Am I here to look after orphaned HIV orphans or whatever it is?
Mm.
Am I here to create the best software technology on the planet? Am I here to make people's lives easier with a mobile app?
Yeah.
Payments easier in Africa? Whatever it is, I need to know my reason why I'm in business.
Yeah.
And that then is your vision. And then once you've got your vision, your strategy follows after that. We can always give the MBA version of a vision, and that is, I can give it to you in 5 minutes, and that is a year's studying done in 5 minutes. You start with your vision, then you go, that translates into your mission, that ends up with executable goals, measurable goals, and then you've got your control, and then your feedback session. You've also always got to have a SWOT analysis,
of course.
To feed in over there.
Of course.
So there you've got your strategic management MBA done in not even in 2 minutes kind of thing, okay?
Yeah.
But it all starts off with the vision. Like,
yeah.
The guys need to understand why they're in business. It's probably
yeah.
the most important grounding that they and piece of knowledge that they need to know why they're in business. And once they've got that, they can get their vision written down. And you know, you can go into many corporates and you go into the reception areas, normally there's marble floors and granite tiles and whatever it is, and they always have beautiful up on the wall their vision, okay? And you can ask most of the corporate employees may be able to recite what the vision is, But they won't be able to tell you why they're doing this.
Exactly.
They'll be able to say that we're here to make a profit.
Yeah.
We're here to satisfy our shareholders.
Yeah.
But for the startup, he's got a definite why.
Yeah. And it's such good advice for startups. The why is so important. It will really bring tenure. It will bring sustainability. It will bring you want to be there rather than just being there for the short-term gain of money, because that we can do in a very myriad of different ways. So, Cameron, there are different approaches to strategy. And I know the Boston Consulting Group has a model of five different approaches. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, so and these are hugely successful companies that we're using over here. They're global companies. A lot of people may not have heard of Uber or NetFlorest. Uber, not in all countries in the world yet, but expanding very rapidly. NetFlorest, very much a South African company. But I think everybody on the planet
Apple.
Is very close to a Coca-Cola outlet, and sure. This is the classical approach: is they just be the biggest, okay? Mm-hmm. And they dominate by being on every single shop, cafe, supermarket outlet, billboard, wherever you look, anywhere in the world, from the developed world to third world countries to an island in the Pacific, you're going to find a Coca-Cola sign.
Yeah.
They take the classical approach of dominating in terms of advertising time. They're on television. They'll be on every Soccer World Cup as an advertiser. And they've got the money to spend, and they spend it. They've got a huge, massive marketing department, massive marketing budget, and they just go out and dominate. Another one that's very good at that is SA Breweries, now being bought out by Anheuser-Busch. And they are massive in terms of, they're now, I think, they're one of the biggest breweries in the world.
Yeah.
And they're just going to dominate. There's just no doubt about it. Okay. Yeah. So they take, their strategy is domination and scale. So that's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And they've got the resources to be able to do that financially and with logistics. They can do it, and they can do it in terms of marketing budget. And of course, the people on the ground that they can do that as well.
Right. The adaptive approach.
Okay, so these are the companies, generally speaking, that we like. Okay,
yes.
they come up with really quirky advertising. They're very quick on their in terms of being reactive to happenings. They're very contemporary. So if something has happened in a country on the political scene, they'll come out with some other advertising campaign that will make a play on that. When Nando's went into the UK, they become one of the most successful brands in the UK, and nobody really knows that it's actually a South African brand. They come across as a Portuguese peri-peri chicken brand, and it was started by a guy in a pretty down-run suburb in the south of Johannesburg in South Africa, and they've done exceptionally well. They are all about adapting and responding rapidly to events and environments around them, and making sure that they are aligned to the people's feelings.
Mm. And you're right, Cameron, with Nando's, from a South African perspective, when something happens in the country, albeit from a sports point of view or political point of view, you almost expect Nando's to come with some type of advert to talk about this.
And you're going to see it, and you're going to watch this advert, and you think, that was so clever. How did they think of that? And this thing only happened yesterday or the day before. They already have an advert out in the press or on a... They might not be able to be on TV because they've got a book, you know, before the time, but they'll have a YouTube video clip or something like that, and
absolutely.
They're very good, okay?
Absolutely.
It's all about doing something, testing something. It could be on their menu. They put it out, and they find out that this works very well in this particular country, and rolling it out and scaling up rapidly.
I absolutely love that. So the firsts, being the first, the Ubers, the Airbnbs.
Okay, so for the guys where Uber has not yet rolled out into your countries, they're not in all countries in the world, as I mentioned earlier on, but they're rolling out rapidly.
Yeah.
As we speak here, they are now... they've been going for less than I think 6 years or something like that, and they are worth more on the New York Stock Exchange or on the NASDAQ than what General Motors has been around for over 100 years. Okay, it is an unbelievable company. They the biggest automotive company in the world, and they do not own one single car.
Yeah.
So they are first to market. They came up with this fantastic platform of disorganized travelers on one side and disorganized car drivers on the other side, and they bring the disorganized traveler to the disorganized driver, and they get them organized, and he wants to go to some to the airport, and he has the drive on this side, and he's prepared. He's got spare time, he's got downtime in his car or his cab, and he can then take them and then match him on this amazing technology called the Uber platform.
Yeah.
They're visionary in terms of where they want to go with this. They don't do any advertising. They've got very good advertising or marketing below the what we call below the line marketing. It's almost like guerrilla marketing. They've they'll do clever things like on Valentine's Day. They'll say, you know, you can take your Valentine out for free or something along those lines, or over Christmas they'll do some fantastic stuff, or even on a day when there's a charity day or something, they'll say, okay, we'll deliver your teddy bears to the kids charities, orphanages for free, just you know, bring them out, whatever it is, something along those lines. They're visionary in their approach. They want to take over the world, and they've got a mindset that is global in its approach, probably universal in its approach. You look at the likes of Airbnb, biggest hotel group in the world, and they don't own a single room.
Yeah.
And you can go into Airbnb and you can book a room in Kenya, and you can go to probably Iceland and book a room in Iceland, and of course you can go to places like New York and Paris.
Yeah.
Visionary, and they stay relevant, and they are absolutely amazing companies. For people like us that are in the startup environment, these guys are still in startup mode, essentially, and they are worth billions.
Yeah. Of course. And I think that's part of their success. They continue to be in that startup mindset. They don't fall into the classical approaches, etc. So then we have these guys who are the big orchestrators, the big pharma, the florists. Talk to us about that strategy.
These are the guys that they've taken a traditional industry. Let's take the net florist guys for a start.
Yeah.
You've got all of these, just call them disorganized florists all over the country. And you've got the disorganized buyers of flowers.
Yeah.
And you've got to look up, in the old days, we'd call the yellow pages in a telephone directory. And then we progressed onto a search engine, and you could find them. Okay, but what these guys do, they just built a platform, and they put all the florists onto the platform. Mm. And then your first top of mind thought when you want to buy flowers for your loved one or to send to somebody in hospital or something along those lines, get onto NetFlorist. They've taken existing infrastructure and they've just dragged it kicking and screaming a lot of the time into the technology
era,
and they've made it into a platform that can facilitate ease of use, and that is what they've done over here. That is where you call them. They've shaped the strategy of the traditional florists and made it easier for the buyers of those particular products. To be able to have access to those products.
I absolutely love that. The other day, I was able to send a bunch of flowers from South Africa to somebody in Egypt. I did it in the evening. It was 6:30, and the flowers were delivered. I got a text through my mobile the next morning, 9:15, flowers were delivered. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm sitting in South Africa sending flowers to somebody in Egypt, and the experience is real. And she sends me a pic of the flowers and say, they smell beautiful. It was just surreal almost.
Technology is amazing. There's no doubt about it. And it's just absolutely amazing what can be done with technology these days. And you look at the Internet of Things and we get told that this is just the beginning. You look at this and you think, really? Mm. We're really so far, and this is just the beginning. It's absolutely amazing. We then go into the renewal strategy.
Sure.
And over here, we've got the likes of Apple, okay? It's wonderful to be an early adopter. Okay,
yeah.
So I've got an iPad 1. It's wonderful. I was one of the first guys to get an iPad. You know? The problem with that is that it's now so outdated that I can't download most of the apps in the App Store, etc. And what Apple has done and done very well, they built up a very loyal following, and they come out every year with an upgraded version of whatever it is. They created a market. Who would have thought that they could create a market for a tablet?
Yeah.
You know, they created now. A market for a thing called a watch. What was a watch? I see you wearing one of them.
Yeah.
And then they've revolutionized, of course, the cell phone industry. Mm. So what they've done, they've taken traditional industries and they've renewed them. And then within that particular product category, they renew it on an ongoing basis. And it's one of the most successful companies in the world. And they do a fantastic job at getting that right.
And speaking about early adopters, Cameron, if you had only known that my husband is an early adopter, so Apple's strategy of continuously bringing out new stuff works exceptionally well in our household for him. not for me.
Yes, right. I get that one.
So SMEs, it's very important then that to just wrap on these different potential approaches. When you set up your strategy for your business, what Cameron's explaining to us, that there are different approaches you can take. And it's important to understand what approach you want to take to bring your business forward. How do I know, Cameron, that I have the right strategy?
So there's a couple of criteria that you can apply. And you might be sitting there thinking, geez, I'm never going to be able to be like a Coca-Cola or say breweries or whatever it is. But if you understand that you're competing on business model, not on cost, because it's very difficult for the startup to be able to, they don't have the resources at their disposal to compete on cost most of the time. But if their business model is of such a nature that they can go in and they can disrupt the industry, then that is where the big corporates look very nervously over their shoulders and see these small startups, bright guys, bright ladies coming in and able to disrupt because they are so nimble, they're so quick, they're agile, and they can disrupt the industry.
Yeah.
So make sure your business model is unique.
Yeah.
And then what is this industry going to look like a few years down the line? It could be totally, totally different to where we are now. 5 years ago, taxi drivers all over the world were fairly secure in the knowledge that they had a job. And it was probably going to be like that for the rest of their lives if they were a career taxi driver. You know, the taxi yellow cabbies in New York, they'd been doing it for 35, 40 years, they were going to go on pension. All of a sudden, that entire industry has been disrupted.
Exactly.
Then again, with the likes of driverless cars coming out, where are cars going to be in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time?
Yeah.
So these are creating opportunities for our startups to go in and absolutely disrupt entire industries. And don't think, oh, you've got this monolithic like of Google's or Apple's or the likes of even the likes of Coke or whatever it is, you can go and you can disrupt these industries.
Absolutely. I know that we will put on the screen a typical example of this is a Microsoft externally facing their mission translated into their worldview, into their strategies and ambition. And Cameron, when I saw that you've put this on here, I thought this was really great. The world view, mobile first, cloud first, that's what the world sees. And in the background, Microsoft's working that. But what we see as consumers is just mobile first, cloud first.
100%.
Let's just conclude on exit strategy.
Yeah, so when you design your strategy for your business strategy, keep in mind what your exit strategy is. Are you going to build this business to sell it to a big corporate in 5 years' time? So you're going to go and build, get clients, build revenue quickly. And then that'll be very different if your exit strategy is something that I want to build this business. I want to create a pension fund for myself in 40 years' time. I want to hand over to my kids or whatever, or to a manager, to an MD to manage a business for me. I want to then go on retirement and draw a salary or draw dividends. That'll be a totally different strategy to what your acquisition strategy is. If your strategy is to go to IPO, initial public offering on a stock exchange somewhere in the world, totally different strategy again. You're going to be gearing towards how you're going to get funders and how you're going to get shareholders in.
So important, start with the end in mind.
Exactly.
Has that not been absolutely fascinating to understand strategy better? So you have different approaches that you can use from the classical all the way through to the disruptive. You have to bear in mind that you have the exit in mind first before you start. And then it's important to set up with a vision from the start to make sure that your whole business ties through. If you want, thank you very much, Cameron. Are there any last thoughts before I go to resources?
No, I think that's about it. I think it's be clear about why you're in business, what your exit strategy is, and everything else between there you can figure out.
Yeah, absolutely. Strategy 101 literally unraveled for us by Cameron. We really appreciate that, Cameron. Thank you. Okay. Some other resources that you can go and look at, Strategy 16 Small Business Resolutions for 2016, go and look at that on usatoday.com or defining your business strategy in the entrepreneurship.org website. And lastly, 5 smart exit strategies, if that is something that you want to be considering, that you can go look at with the Business Insider. It's been an absolute pleasure to be with you. Make sure to also catch our session that we recorded with Prof. Shamin on working with multinational corporations. There's a lot of strategy considerations in there that could really tie up very nicely with this module. Until next time. Goodbye.